Hello there, hello.
Hey Aaron, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Nice.
How's your day after the election yesterday?
It's quiet so far. I don't know exactly what that means, but it does seem quiet as I'm sitting here in Day Hall and looking outside and not a lot of people out and about.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't show up to the my first two classes of the day. They just didn't come at all. But
I'm not surprised. I kind of anticipated that would happen.
yeah.
No matter what, it'd be nice if the sun would come back out.
No. And it's so warm that it's like, does it have to rain? Like,
14 folks in here. All right, I'm going to give it one more minute and let some folks get in here. Because I'm not sure.
I'll turn
Erica.
my camera on in a minute, Erica, but we need to remind people to rename themselves and put the EA before their name for voting.
Thank you.
Yes,
Yeah.
ma'am.
Can everyone please, if you are an EA representative, if you could go to the ellipses in the corner of your video and put EA in front of your name so that we can make sure that you are involved in the voting when it does occur later on in our agenda in our meeting today. Awesome. No worries, Ellie. All right. So I am going to call our meeting to order Wednesday, November 6th at 12:01 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We will start with Yvonne and the roll call.
Hi everyone, good afternoon. If you hear your name, if you please make sure that you let me know if you're here, that would be wonderful. Brian Arnold. Mel Bonta.
Here.
Thank you. Adam Blakesley. Ricky Boche.
I'm here.
Thank you. Michael Boggs.
Present.
Thank you. Frank Cantone. Sean Chang. Erica Crawley, you're here. Bethany Dixon. Jamie Doss. I think I see Jamie. Thomas Hambury. Don Henshaw.
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, Don. Ellie Crump Powers.
I'm here.
Thank you. Sophie Lanches.
Here.
Thank you, Sophie. Galverton Lucane. David McDermott.
I'm here.
Thank you. Pia Menders.
Here.
Thank you. Anne Morse.
Present.
Kevin Phipps. Stephanie Rasu.
Present.
Thank you. Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Thank you. Deb Serene.
Here.
Thank you. Wendy Treat.
Present. And Yvonne, Kevin had emailed and said he wasn't going to be able to make the meeting.
Great, thank you for that. And Jana Van Houten. All right, that is everyone. Back to you, Erica.
Thank you, Yvonne. And just as a reminder, please remember for EA members to place EA in front of your name so that we know to keep you in the room when we do our voting later on in the meeting. But I will move on to our land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right. So moving forward, we do have an approval of the October 16th, 2024 minutes. If you all could please give that a overview. Yes, Wendy.
Yes, I just want to make a motion to amend the meetings as there's a typo with our presenter from the last meeting. Under item or article 4, section B, item I and A, Gordon Barger's name is misspelled. It's B-A-R-G-E-R, not B-A-R-K-E-R.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's misspelled item B, I, and A. And then after that, number 2, 3, and 4, it's spelled correctly. So it's just motion to amend by unanimous consent.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been properly moved and seconded to amend the minutes to reflect that Gordon Barger's name is spelled correctly in the October 16th minutes. Are there any other motions to amend the minutes? Okay. So do we need to table this before it can be amended? I mean, accepted. Okay, great. Ricky, you have your hand raised. Oh no, Ricky's trying to enter the room. I'm sorry. All right. So is there a motion to approve the minutes with the necessary amendment? Wendy, is your hand still raised?
No, it's raised. Motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Awesome. Is there a second?
So moved, Kate.
Thank you, Kate. It's been properly moved and seconded to approve the minutes from October 16th, 2024 with the proposed amendment. Yes, Wendy.
I have just one more question. Maybe it's part of the late additions, but I just want to make sure we have quorum because we're going to need it for the incidental vote if someone can confirm that we do.
Okay. Yvonne, do we have quorum? I know you took roll.
And that is half correct.
Quorum is just the majority of the seated members.
Gotcha. So then we do, because I believe we're now today we have 29 members and there are 16.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So are there any late additions to the agenda? Anybody have anything they want to add? No? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to our guest speaker for today, Kenneth Miranda, who's our chief investment officer for Cornell. Ken, we will turn the floor over to you.
Well, thank you, everyone. Just to make sure, Erica, it's a. Do I have everyone's on the screen, or because I usually in Zoom, you can get a couple pages of people. Is
I think this is everyone that's on the screen right now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let me see if I can share this.
We do.
And tell me if everyone can see that. You can see it. Okay.
You're all good to go, Ken.
Okay, well, thank you. Again, thank you everyone for the opportunity to speak. I'm going to go over some aspects of the endowment management, the size of the endowment, the nature of the endowment, etc. I do have a couple of questions that were shared with me earlier. I'll try to get to that at the end of my presentation. Kind of along the way, I'll try to be pretty quick because it's a short period of time. So I've got a few slides and I'll skip over some, but let me just we'll just launch in. So what I was hoping to talk about today is how we think about the portfolio, the positioning, our what happened last year, fiscal year 2024, and longer term. And some of our improvement efforts over the, this is my 9th year as the CIO at Cornell. We've had tremendous changes in technology, in people, in positioning the portfolio, in really trying to drive a culture of excellence for the for performance and for, as a result, for what gets paid out to the university. To support university functions. Let me just start out with our principles of portfolio positioning. This is probably very common to all of you because you're all trying to do this in your personal investing, in your 401k, et cetera. And we're not that unlike it, except we have an infinite horizon. And unfortunately, for those of us with 401 K's or 403 B's and so on, we're trying to manage for a lifetime instead of this infinite horizon. We do maintain a very long-term horizon. We avoid flavors of the month. We're not jumping on this or that. Today we have a very powerful rally going on following the election. We're not trying to jump in and out of the markets by any means. And we try to be deeply diversified and multi-asset in nature. Multi-asset in nature by asset class, by style. I can explain that if people want to hear about that. By market cap, by region, and by managers. We keep our opportunity set very broad. We can use our managers to go in all sorts of areas. So, for example, you might want to have a India-focused equity fund, not managed by us, managed by an external manager. What do we know? What is unknown is far greater than what can be known. I remind my committee all the time, if you were sitting in March 2020 and someone asked me to do a forecast, I always refuse to do forecasts, honestly. But if you're sitting there in March 2020 and someone said, "Hey, what's happening?" And you kind of answer, "Well, you know what? Things are, economy's good, everything's solid, etc." And then 1 month later, 30 million Americans have lost their jobs, right? So, it's not an easy task to anticipate those sorts of issues. As I say, what's unknown is far greater than what can be known. However, what we do is we try to maintain a portfolio through our managers that's highly diversified by potential economic environment, by potential financial environment, by potential domestic political environment, and by potential global geopolitical developments. We do that in order to make sure that we can generate a reasonable rate of return, notwithstanding negative shocks, but also positive shocks. We maintain a liquidity for rebalancing. So when something bad does happen, there is money that you can cost average in, and we often do that. We use what's called active management in less efficient asset classes, and we try to keep our fees and costs very low. In terms of the endowment, people point to the size of the endowment. This data is from 2023. We're not that much different. You see us at the bottom of this pack. This is the Ivy Plus endowments. You see the endowment values at Princeton, Yale, and Stanford, well above 30, 35, 36 million. Harvard, almost 50 million. Cornell has a solid endowment of 10 billion. But when we look at the endowment and what it can cover, we're a very high enrollment university. So if you look at the first column, our endowment per student, which is really an important measure, and I'll get to why it's an important measure in a moment, is actually pretty low. We have to be aware of that. At the end of the day, the endowment has a payout policy, and that payout is used for faculty, buildings, research, and student financial aid, among others. Our goal in the office is not only to make sure we pay out approximately 5% per year, and maintain a wonderful growing endowment, not necessarily every year, but also that we make sure that we run this on a proper risk tolerance level. And I can talk about risk tolerance. Maybe I'll talk about that really briefly here. What do we worry about for Cornell? First of all, we have a tremendously open focus on the types of students we accept from incredibly diverse socioeconomic backgrounds. Because of that, we definitely want to make sure that we have the financial resources for financial aid. We have a tremendous faculty research program. We have needs among the colleges and divisions of the university. Again, the endowment per student is probably a better measure of how we stack up compared to the sort of absolute number of 10 billion. How do we allocate? Well, we're not that much different than most of our peers. This is an example of it's an averaging across endowments over $5 billion. Basically, it's color-coded. So the various shades of blue are equity-oriented investments. The various shades of orange, let's call them orange, are sort of lower risk diversifying assets like bonds and fixed income and certain types of market neutral hedge funds. And then the green is real assets. What do we mean by real assets? We mean real estate and resources, things that are inputs into the economy in many different ways. When I say resources, real estate is the vast bulk of that real asset portfolio. And by the way, on our resources portfolio, we have a heavy commitment. I shouldn't say heavy. It's a growing commitment to the energy and carbon transition. I showed that average, and now I'm going to show on this slide. On the far right is Cornell's strategic asset allocation. Again, color-coded blues and oranges, various types of greens, broken down between resources and real estate. And then on the far right, what our peers do, the 11 Ivy Plus peers. You can see we're broadly similar. It's not like we're copying them or anything. The fact is, a 5% real return requirement is very demanding. And because it's demanding, you have to take a certain level of equity risk. And that's why the blues match up sort of across all of us. Now, within the blue, some take higher levels of risk than we take, some take lower levels of risk, but broadly, that risk is required to meet payout requirements. Here's our strategic asset allocation. I'll just focus on the far right-hand column. That's where we're trying to get to. You can see the top three lines are equity pieces, private equity, emerging market equity, global equity is kind of going top bottom to top. And then we have a smattering of other assets. Again, the other assets help diversify the portfolio. Skip this slide. This is kind of where what our theoretical allocation is versus where we are at. I do want to point this out. We run what's called the merged pool. The merged pool is both the endowment, and I'll speak in a moment of what do we mean by endowment, right? And a bunch of other pieces that we manage on behalf of the university. In the middle circle, that's the vast, that the red is the vast majority. The vast majority is the endowment. Something like, I don't know if the number's on here, but the endowment is approximately 10 billion, but we manage some other slices on behalf of the university. Well, now, what do we mean by endowment? I'm going to just take a pause here. The endowment, you know, people say the endowment, but it's not really the endowment. What we call the LTIP, most people refer to the endowment, but the endowment is actually 8,000 plus different endowments. It's not the retained earnings of the university. It's not, you know, profits from tuition revenue. In fact, there are no profits from tuition revenue because we use those, in fact, to help subvent financial aid. It is really outside generosity, creating a sleeve, like a mutual fund, like you can invest in a mutual fund and you own a pro rata share. And most of these endowments have specific purposes. So again, 8,000 different little accounts, some of them not so little, that are dedicated to particular purposes. I do want to emphasize that because, again, it's I think there is just sort of this notion that it's, you know, this money has come from university surpluses, and it never has. It's really been the generosity of alumni. What are we worried about? Well, yesterday sorted out one of the pieces we were thinking about, like big picture themes for the years ahead. Let's see, today the Federal Reserve will make another announcement on interest rate policy. I mean, those are sort of pieces that you have to think about. We're not necessarily maneuvering around them unless they're major, but we sometimes do have to react to those pieces. For example, today, with markets up sharply yesterday and today, we tend to rebalance our portfolio back to our targets. And if we hit a threshold, we'll rebalance the portfolio. Big theme ahead, the proliferation of artificial intelligence. We don't really know where that will have the greatest impact. Of course, a lot of people want to just invest in AI firms. But the truth is, a lot of companies in the industrial and service sectors will get tremendous boosts to their productivity. So, you know, we kind of think about this as, you know, there's the direct possibility of investing in AI, and then there's the, you know, what's going to happen in the economy, and what's that transition look like? Do we lose more jobs first before we gain them back? Like, often that happens as the economy adjusts to the future technology of the economy. I'll move on. There are a lot of geopolitical tensions today, certainly in the Middle East and certainly in Russia. And we have some very large differences in central bank easing cycles. And something that I don't know how many of you follow, I doubt you do, happy to talk about it, but this rise of non-bank financial intermediation. Look, after the global financial crisis, no one wanted to go there again. So there were a lot of restrictions placed on banks. And those restrictions, frankly, pushed a lot of what the banks did out into a different model, which is non-bank intermediation of loans to corporate clients. And it's something that's actually created a tremendous opportunity. I'll just skip a few of these. Let's talk about last year's performance and then put it in context. Look, we faced headwinds. We've spoke to some of them, obviously geopolitical risk in the Middle East and Ukraine. We had high policy rates during most of all of fiscal year 24. The easing cycle began afterwards, and that those high short-term interest rates determined by the Fed were aimed at reducing the inflationary impulse. Everyone's read about the stress in the U.S. commercial real estate sector, particularly the office sector. COVID and work from home has dramatically changed those dynamics. We did have exposure to the office sector, much of it, from years and years ago when you make your commitment. And when you make a commitment to real estate, you're in there for 10 years. So we did take a little bit of a hit from that. We have muted growth in China. We had muted growth in China. It's continuing, frankly, and diverging monetary policy. So that's what we faced in fiscal year 24. How did we do? We generated a return of 8.7% in fiscal year 24, approximately a gain of 860 million. Now, I'm going to just translate that quickly. 860 million times 5%, I won't do the math entirely right, but that's $43 million extra that will ultimately flow to the university because we pay 5% of the value. Now, that assumes we maintain that value over time, but basically, you can think about that those gains and losses as ultimately flowing through in the amount we distribute to the university kind of evenly over the year. And departments and are beneficiaries of the receipt. Financial aid is a beneficiary. Certain research labs are a beneficiary. So we did underperform our benchmark. Honestly, second year in a row. Is that necessarily something we worry about? Yes, we do. However, last year was very explainable. We have a private equity portfolio that has an asynchronous and typically lower amplitude performance relative to public markets. And last year was the same as the year before. All that said, I'll show you in a moment, we did very well except for private equity. And we think, we don't think of private equity as a one-year return asset class or a two-year return. We think of it as a 5 to 10 year returning asset class. Notwithstanding that shortfall in private equity, we've gained about 10% annualized over the 5 years ending in June 2024. That's exceeded the benchmark by 1% per annum. So I think we're doing very well in that regard, longer term. In terms of, hey, how did we actually do if we were to look at our performance last year? Seven out of our eight asset classes generated returns in line or above their respective benchmarks. We did extremely well. Five asset classes outperformed by more than 150 basis points, and four asset classes outperformed by more than 290 basis points. So we did very well. The one asset class, the second one down, private equity, substantial underperformance. Relative to our private equity benchmark. Our private equity benchmark is linked off of our public market benchmark. So when public markets go up and private equity doesn't do well, you do get this underperformance in the short run. Well, what happens if we zoom out from for more than 1 year and look at the 5 year returns? Over the 5 year period, all eight asset classes have outperformed their respective benchmarks. And six of the asset classes have outperformed by more than 100 basis points. And if you then go in and look at our private equity return, you can see over a 5 year period, we do outperform. That's the second box on the left-hand side, private equity, 16.9. That's a huge annualized return. It outperforms the benchmark by about 180 basis points per annum over that 5 year period. But if you also look, it's the best performing asset class that we have. It's been better than our public equities, which posted a 12.4% return, which itself outperformed its own benchmark. So, I don't want to sound defensive. Private equity does have this anomalous and asynchronous cycle. We just have to work through that cycle and maintain that long-term horizon that we try to maintain. This kind of repeats a little bit. Last year, 8.7, our 5-year return was 10. Our 5-year rail return was 5.6. Why do I look at that 5.6? It's because we pay out 5%. So unless we're earning 5.6 rail, meaning inflation adjusted, the endowment is likely to be shrinking in size. I should say that more carefully. Except for gifts, we have to grow by 5% in order to maintain our size. If we exceed 5%, we grow our overall portfolio size. This is maybe a little bit too much detail on what's happened with our private equity, but you can see our private equity returns have been the source of our underperformance for the past 2 years. Here's what we paid out to the university. You notice it rises steadily up and to the right. We paid out $411 million last year, fiscal year 24. That's less than 5%. The reason it's less than 5% is we use a longer term averaging formula of 7 years. But long story short, that will eventually rise to 5% of the LTI value. And as I said, with another $860 million in gains, that number continues to get pulled up and to support the university. Here's what we spend our money on. Now, I don't see this side, to be honest. We're in charge of investments, but we can go to DFA and ask, hey, of that money that we sent out, what was it spent on? And you can see academic programs and research, 29%, financial aid, 29%, general purpose and facility support, 20%, professorship, 20%. So again, these are alums who have had particular passions about what to fund and finance and allow us to steward their money for that payout each year. And very clearly, those professorships are supported, subsidized, whatever word you want to use, but by this endowment. So are a lot of academic programs and research, and importantly, financial aid to students. So we're moving in the right direction. Again, if I go back to that slide, we're relatively low in endowment per student, and each year that we can generate strong performance, we add to that capability of supporting all of this that we currently support. We're near record levels. When I joined Cornell, we were at about $5.9 billion. Today, we're at about $10 billion, $10.7 billion. So we continue to move in the right direction. Let me just point out by the way, this chart, it's very colorful. It's intended to show is that you can't really tell what's going to be the best performing asset class, hence the reason we diversify. So you can see in the fiscal year 2018 to 21, private equity was our best performing asset class. Then in fiscal year 23 and 24, global equities were. And by the way, private equity fell to the bottom. So getting back to that earlier statement I said about why do we diversify? This is the reason. The future is so unknown. You need to make sure your portfolio is resilient. Every asset class is a different cycle, and we try to make sure we have exposure that over time generates a solid rate of return, but in any given year, it could be at the top or it could be at the bottom. Very interestingly, fiscal year 2016, core fixed income, which is low returning bonds, was at the top of the rate of return chart. So it's very important to think about. I do get some alums telling me, well, you should be 100% in the S&P 500. And that's really not appropriate for a risk managed, diversified approach to a portfolio that's supposed to be infinite in its time horizon. Where did we rank last year? Our fiscal year returns, we did fall out of the top quartile last year. Fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23, we were in the top quartile, third out of 12. This is against the Ivy Plus. Last year, we fell a little bit behind. Columbia posted a great return. I can explain every single one of these numbers as to what our peers did that allowed that that was different from what we did, and as a result, why we ranked fifth this year. Look, our goal as an office is to try to get us and maintain us in the top quartile. It's not always possible year in and year out, but let's see what happens here. On a trailing three-year basis, we were the number one performing endowment. I just restate that. We were the number one performing endowment in this on the three-year basis. And, you know, the office takes great pride in that achievement. You know, if you look, Cornell has never been number one on the three-year. That's a lengthy period of time. Our immediate focus is how do we get there on the five-year? Don't know if we'll get there, but aspirationally, everyone in the office is focused on, you know, making sure we take the right levels of risk, have the right manager lineup, have a proper processes, have the right risk controls in place. I'll probably stop there and maybe talk a little bit about to some of the questions I received. I know I'm running out of time. Is that right, Erica? Yep.
Yes, we are coming up on time, but if you can address those questions, that would be great.
Sure. So first, some of the questions I can't really, in fact, they're great questions. Unfortunately, it's not our, some of these aren't our tasks. Let me read through some of the questions. So one was, could you talk about the tax implications to consider for those in the employee degree program? I would probably push you to HR. I don't know that. We do have some of our staff doing it, and I do know there's an imputed value to that, the courses. Depends on the level of the graduate, if whether it's undergraduate or graduate, but there are tax implications. We're not really a tax counsel. We don't really know the answers to that sort of query. There are several people in HR who would know immediately. I don't want to identify them, but that's really more of an HR and possibly tax office question. Second question, what kind of impact would divesting have on employee salary, hourly wages, and retirement, if at all? Would divestment impact the university's ability to hire? If so, what would that look like? And if not, why not? I can't really answer that because we don't have direct linkages to employee salary and hourly wages, much less the retirement programs. The retirement programs are 403B plans with a, you know, whether it's Fidelity or TIAA, possible selection of various funds. You know, all I can say is, let me take the third question. And again, I'm going to have to punt. It's just, unfortunately, this isn't what we do. The third question, I'll link it back to the second. Certain groups have called for Cornell to divest in certain companies like Lockheed Martin and LC3. Can you speak more on to how plausible these requests are, how your team reacts or does not based on what they see in the media? So I'm going to answer that in two ways. First, our office doesn't really react to this. We can't react. We're professionals. We run a professional portfolio. We can't actually do many of the things that might be asked for because you have to go through the managers. And sometimes it's just very cost inefficient. However, let me say this. There is a very well-known process at Cornell for items that are considered morally reprehensible, et cetera. We don't get involved in that. We're a taker of that. So, for example, several years ago, there was a request to consider fossil fuel divestment. And the five constituent groups, I think it's five constituent groups, put together a proposal. Proposal went up. We don't really see that or react to that until the final stage, where we might be asked to counsel on what's the best way of handling this. We handle it. We have a moratorium on upstream private fossil fuel investments. We adhere to that. Simultaneously, we also adhere to an effort, a very strong effort, to think about the energy and carbon transition. Honestly, it can be highly profitable. So, you know, we feel like in our that shift in investment policy, where we no longer do fossil fuels and now we do energy and carbon transition, you know, we just react. I should be careful. I don't want to say we're totally reactive, but this isn't our turf. There's a whole sequence of steps that are taken outside the investment office. There's a whole process that Cornell has in place. And, you know, we don't, you know, we're professionals. Whatever we try to do, it's within the context of what agreements have been reached. So I'm going to stop there. Those were the three questions that were sent. I could probably take one more question or so, but I am aware I'm over time.
Yes. We would want to give the floor to one question if there is a lingering question out there. But if not, then folks can follow up with Ken via email. Is that okay, Ken?
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any question out there? Going once, twice. All right. Well, thank you, Ken. We appreciate you coming to speak with us today, and I will make sure to get your email out to the EA representatives if they have any additional questions for you.
Okay. Well, first, let me reiterate, a pleasure to talk. Happy to do it anytime. We're trying to do the best possible for Cornell. We're trying to support financial aid. We're trying to support professorships. We're trying to support faculty research. We take our vocation extremely seriously. We're trying to do the best for Cornell.
Thank you so much, Ken. We appreciate you spending some time with us.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to exit. Thank you so much, Erica.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, great people. We will move on to the next item in our agenda, which is going to be incidental vacancies. So, Wendy, I'll turn it over to you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Erica. I appreciate it. So good afternoon, everyone. We have an individual who is interested in joining us for the vacant, engineering and computer information science seat. Their name is Rose Howard, and she is on right now. The really quick blurb that she gave me, I can read, and then I would ask Rose. I'm sorry, I apologize if I'm using the wrong pronoun. Is it she, her? You're good with that? Okay, I see it now. I have my email open, so it's covering the screen. I apologize. She is passionate about connecting, reaching across boundaries, and connecting administrators with new tools and shortcuts to make our lives better. I believe in fostering a collaborative environment where people are included and actively engaged. Has already spoken with her supervisor that it could be a possibility, and her supervisor has encouraged her to look into this and will support if offered. So I will defer the rest of my time over to Rose, and she can provide a little more about her, why she's interested in filling this vacancy, and anything like that. And then Rose, once you're done, we will open it up to any like a Q&A for the EA members.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you all. My name is Rose Howard. I use she, her pronouns. I'm over in Upson Hall in mechanical and aerospace engineering as an administrator. I've been at Cornell for a little over 2 years. When I first joined, I immediately joined our Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering DEI committee, and I continue to serve on that committee. And in the spring after I joined in the fall. So in the spring, right after, I joined our LGBTQ CNG as our treasurer, inaugural treasurer. They've never had one. Every time I work somewhere, I try to find a way to give back to my community. That's an important consideration for me. I grew up in Section 8 housing. I am a first gen college student, and I'm just always looking for ways to participate. And I'm looking for ways to participate more, even more than I have been, in the way to like affect policy, perhaps join a join one of the committees, but just really just be even more embedded in the community and what I can do here. And I have a history of volunteerism that extends back for quite some time. And so I mentioned that to one of my colleagues and they're like, oh, you're thinking about joining the AA? Did you know there's a vacant seat? And I was like, I didn't know there was a vacant seat. So I was just encouraged to reach out to y'all and see if you were interested in having me. That's my blurb.
Great. Thanks, Rose. We'll open it up to questions. If anyone has any questions or anything else they would like to ask Rose, please go ahead and raise your hand and we'll go from there.
I have a question, Rose. So one of the challenges that we kind of keep hearing from our representatives is in connecting with our constituents, right? What are some ways that you think you would, how would you approach this, I guess my question is, in making sure that you are connected to your constituents and representing them in this particular body?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. I'm actually one of those people that's pretty outgoing, even though like I consider myself deeply an introvert, but like not physically an introvert. I don't know if that makes any sense. So I actually regularly check in with a lot of the other people already in the College of Engineering. So the College of Engineering has, depending on how you count us, there's like 13 schools and I'm in one of them. I'm an assistant to the director. So we already meet roughly monthly as all the assistant to the directors. And so through my other assistant directors over the last 2 years, I've actually met a bunch of people in the different schools. And even today, as we could maybe quietly acknowledge as a bit of an interesting day in the history of our country, I actually spent some time just walking around checking on people physically, going to different offices, making sure people, if they got a hug and they needed a hug, they got one. If they didn't, they didn't, you know, just so I'm already like actively reaching out across the schools of engineering. I'm also connected to the dean's office in the engineering. So I end up hearing about a lot of things that happen. So I ended up being a good touchstone to reach out to people. So I feel like I'm well positioned actually to get feedback if I was to join the EA, if to be even like to take those existing relationships and then build on them. If we were looking for, say, input on something or, you know, a specific policy that we wanted to find out about, I feel like I would be well positioned to get that information.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Tom. Did you raise your hand? Oh, okay. I have a question. How comfortable are you engaging with people from diverse backgrounds?
Yeah, very. I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. The community I was in was incredibly diverse. I went to a school with 3,000 students from my high school. So I was exposed to people from all over the world, all different backgrounds, different religions, different belief systems, all sorts of things. And so I am not the person that is afraid to cross a boundary because it's unknown. I feel like it's innate to like how I was raised and who I am to be like, hey, what's going on with you? of any kind of thing. And, you know, I think it's not uncommon for us when we meet someone different to sometimes be like, oh, I don't know how to breach this difference. But I'm one of those people that doesn't seem to be a problem for.
Okay. So Bethany is saying hi, so in it delighted you're interested in joining EA. I have one other question, and then if no one else has any questions, we will close the Q&A and head into executive session so that we can do the voting. Time commitment. You mentioned in your email to me that your supervisor is supportive of this, and I just wanted to confirm that. So the EA meets on the first and third Wednesday of the month from 12 p.m. until 1:15 p.m. We are virtual given the fact that we have some members and staff who no longer even have a physical space here on campus. Sophie Lanchez is actually, she's on the call somewhere. There she is. She's our Cornell Tech rep, so she lives and hangs out with us from New York City. Jana Van Houten is our Geneva rep. So like I said, we have people who aren't even here. So right there is about 2.5 hours a month. And then depending on committees and whatever what committees you might be on and when they meet, you're probably looking at minimum 5 hours a month, maybe more depending. We also have one-off events when we do that, have like the president's address to staff, which we support. We'll ask for people to come and help out with greeting people and promoting us. We actually have introduced a new EA coffee with coworkers. So there might be, you know, if that's something that you're interested in, so you can talk a little bit more about how your constituency, or just even to give more information about that. So you're cool with that time commitment and the capacity that it might be.
Yes, I have mentioned to my board for the CNG that if I was to be accepted in this incidental vacancy, that I would probably step back from the CNG when my term is up in January to help free up some time. And I'm not only interested in the EA timing that I've been that I know about, but I've also been thinking about the benefits and policy meetings, I think are on Thursdays at a time that wouldn't conflict with my existing duties in my current position. So that's like one option. I know that that wouldn't be necessarily the only one. So I know there would be some committees that I wouldn't be able to attend because I have to take minutes as part of my duties, but then other potential meetings or events I can confidently say we would find a way that I would be able to attend.
Okay, awesome. And then just a really quick follow-up to that as well. So this seat, the College of Engineering and Computer Information Sciences representative, all of our seats are 3-year terms, and this particular seat will term in 2027. So should you be successful in being appointed into this vacancy, you would finish out the rest of 2024. We have elections every spring, so the next election will be in spring 2025, but your seat wouldn't come up for election again until spring 2027. Does that work for you?
Yes.
Right. We just want to make sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions for Rose or anything? If not, I will close the Q&A. And Jessica or Eric, if one of you could please put us into executive session so that we can vote. What that means for non-EA members is that you all just go into a waiting room while we discuss this and vote, and then we will bring you back once we're done.
Okay, I think you're all ready, Wendy.
Beth Corson,
oh,
please.
Just
sorry, Beth. All right, now we're good. Because Aaron is our clerk, correct?
That's correct, yep.
All right, cool. Okay, oh, any
changes? Have there been any thoughts from your constituents about these recent changes? I see a lot of head nods, so yes, Wendy.
I'm just wondering, do we have communication as to when any other changes will come into place? You just mentioned that ERB law is going to be changing soon. Do we have a sense of when?
Unfortunately, communication from parking has been rather limited. They did share that they're planning to attend one of our welfare meetings, committee meetings, sorry. But I am not 100% sure when that is. But I can imagine in the next 2 to 3 meetings that will happen. So that's actually part of the conversation, right? Like, have you all, as individuals who park in different locations, even received this communication? So a lot of no's. Well, feel free to chime in. Any thoughts on these recent changes on the what seems to be lack of communication.
I'll chime in. So with Hoy Garage, that is, the park mobile has definitely been limited since the construction has been happening and the engineering quad, well, wherever that is, where the baseball field used to be, which is no longer. And so it lessened the options for park mobile, and you aren't able to, or you're not supposed to park in the garage if it's not the park mobile designated spots. However, from what I've seen, there is underutilization of the garage because people try to stay in the covered areas, but there is the roof that is not heavily utilized all the time. So I'm wondering if they can open that up to park mobile spots so that way you're not interfering with where folks are normally parking with their parking placards, but at least have some additional spots at the top that could also be park mobile.
Thank you, Erica. Is it okay if I continue to acknowledge different individuals? Awesome. Michael?
Yeah, I didn't get any notification either. I didn't see any. The one thing I wanted to point out was over where the new athletic facility is going, there's going to be a lay down area. So there's paint in the parking lot. You'll see where there's going to be many, many, many spots. And that's essentially Central Campus that will be taken out of service for quite a long time. The Atkinson building, that took up the parking lot. Those of you that remember before Gates was built, that took up a parking lot. So mostly what I'm interested in is looking for a commitment that they will start adding more parking. There's been a lot of changes. I've had several people in my group had $150 tickets. Because they're, you know, cost them more money to come to work a day. They get a $150 ticket than they're making. So they just keep carving away at spots. And the university is growing. We're hiring more people. I personally don't like the fact that a lot of people are remote, but it's for a lot of people, it's not economical to come to work when you're having to pay so much for parking. So I'm looking for a commitment for more spots. I'm not interested in listening to Bridget again talk about all these demand side programs. I'd like to, you know, hear it from Burgess. He's our vice president. And that's where, we've just listened to the investment officer. Let's have a program to add more spots. You know, maybe we need another garage somewhere closer to Central Campus. Anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Michael. Wendy?
Yeah, and this isn't a question, it's just a comment as well. So I work at the vet school, and I actually had a OLA permit. And if I didn't get to work by 8:45 at the absolute latest, I don't have a parking spot, basically, or I'm parking really far. And again, dark and crummy weather, it was a bit of a walk. Also, clarification, the TRB lot is actually considered one of the daily decision lots. So I don't know if all of you are aware of that. Any park mobile lot that's been classified as a daily decision lot, actually it's a lower daily rate. So for instance, before they put all these holds on the park mobiles here at the vet school, if you parked in the bigger B lot, that was $6 a day. But if you parked in the smaller TRB park mobile lot, it's only like $2.50 or $2 a day. So of course, if you're only coming in a couple days a week, you're gonna pay the $2 instead of the $6. Anyway, but I'm with you as well, Michael. I think that something from the university to give us more parking option, and not like, oh, you can park out at East Hill Plaza and take a bus over, because all of us have some really wonky, funky schedules, and that just doesn't, that's not a viable option for a majority of staff.
Thank you, Wendy. Melissa?
So as someone that paid $550 in parking fines, there is a lack of transparency from that department. I did park over by the Johnson, because I had to take my son to a doctor's appointment and I had a meeting. I was in a hurry, paid Park Mobile, walked out, and had a $150 ticket on my car. I obviously was not very happy about that, kind of set the ticket aside. All of a sudden, honestly, got an email that there was a boot on my car. I called transportation, said I want to take care of this, paid $150, assuming that my everything was taken care of. Come to find out, 2 days later, I have another boot on my vehicle. And they were telling me that I did not take care of my fines. I said in the conversation initially that I wanted to take care of everything. They have a separate company putting boots on vehicles, and then they are not being transparent that you have to pay additional fines on top of the $150 boot fees. I can also speak that I just attended a training last week and I was joking, like, you know, having conversations that I was a member of in the EA, and, you know, I wanted to see what people really wanted to bring forward. And a lot of conversations was parking. Parking is a very large issue for everyone on this campus. And a lot of people have stories like I did. And I think that is one of the biggest things Employee Assembly could really start pushing that would make a big impact for the staff on this campus.
Thank you, Melissa. Anne?
Following up a little bit on Melissa's comments, as we know from past surveys, parking is a huge issue on campus for people, and so more communication rather than less would be really helpful. I didn't realize, thank you, Wendy, for that tip about the daily decision parking lots, because there's a lack of transparency about the cost per hour for the parking lots, and that would be really, really helpful for people. The Redbud lot on the northwest side of campus reduced the Park Mobile section to a very small section, which is always filled up, which is a concern because it's a little bit farther out. And for those of us looking to pay less for Park Mobile, that lot was very helpful because it also connected directly with the bus. So there's also a bit of, there's some unfairness, of course, in Park Mobile because some folks have higher salaries or higher incomes and can pay for those. For some of the more expensive Park Mobile spaces, which are closer to campus. So that's also a concern that I've heard. The last thing I just wanted to mention is not specifically to parking, but because parking is one of the number one issues that we hear about, I just wanted to also at some point hear a little bit about any plans the EA might have to survey staff again about their concerns. I'm sure this would perhaps give a little bit of impetus to parking facilities to communicate more out about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. And for the sake of time, I think we'll end with Pia.
Okay, wanted to comment on the Park Mobile. I see how it's not being a priority, and I don't know how it could be. I park at Hoy, and I waited for months and months and months to be able to buy a permit to park there because they're usually closed. And right now it's closed and it's been closed for months. So you say there's room in the roof, but it must be that those are permits that are being paid for and you need to have the space for people if they are paying and they're coming, right? So we definitely need more space. It's not just like saying at Park Mobile, because how? Which is, yeah, disheartening.
Thank you, Pia. Thank you so much for the feedback. Really appreciate it. I've taken some notes. I'm going to take it back to our welfare committee and continue the conversation. If you happen to have any other comments, thoughts, either from yourself or from your constituents, feel free to send them to myself or to Christy Mahoney and the welfare committee. And we will continue this conversation because it sounds like this is definitely a topic that is very important to you and the rest of the your constituents. So we hope to find a solution and not just continuous band-aids as have happened. Bethany?
Thank you, Yvonne. Just really quickly, I wanted to share that I am also a liaison on the Arts and Sciences DEI committee, and they have done a lot of work as well trying to talk with parking. They've had Bridget and Reed visit. They've proposed lots of different feedback that they've gathered from the Arts and Sciences departments. And unfortunately, I really do not think that there's going to be any movement or progress in the parking realm. I think there's been a lot of effort for many years of staff trying to communicate like very detailed concerns and proposed solutions. And whether or not Bridget and Reed are empowered to act on any of those solutions is sort of unclear. I do not think they are. I know they're happy to talk with us, but I just wanted to add my two cents that I think we might at some point want to just consider putting a pause on fighting this battle over and over and over, because I think there's a lot of places our energy can go, and the, you know, EA leadership is doing an amazing job, and I'm not trying to dissuade you from fighting the good fight, but I just don't think there's going to be any movement, unfortunately.
Thank you, Bethany. Erica, back to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for your input on parking. This may be something we can take to UA. So awesome. So we're going to go over to committee reports, executive committee. So we'll start with Yvonne.
Hi again, everyone. Just a reminder that our next Coffee with Coworkers is happening on December 5th in Duffield. If you're able to attend, you're, of course, welcome. We're going to have some more vouchers for coffee there. And we will have some type of advertisement shared with you all, so you can share it with your constituents. What time? That is from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. December 5th in Duffield Hall. That is all I have for now.
Thank you, Yvonne. And Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee, that'll be Don.
Yeah, right now I don't have anything new to add, but I'm going to be, when we get done with the meeting, I'm a little behind here, but I'm going to be scheduling our meeting, our first meeting this week. So
thanks for that update, Don. Employee Education and Development Committee.
Hi, everybody. So our team has met a couple of times now, and I'm happy to share. We have a few items on our list of proposed topics and things that we want to focus on. Just quickly, we have a few things. I'll just highlight a couple of things where we're getting some traction on. Jeremy's been working on equitable educational benefits for CCE County staff. He's going to have a meeting with Andy Turner, the executive director of CCE. And so hopefully that's moving forward. Another thing is the online part-time bachelor's program was approved by the Faculty Senate, and I think there's been another movement on that as well. We're really just a support role and sort of communicating to our constituents if and when, and just sort of asking questions as things come up. So I think that's great that that's something that's going to be available for hopefully for staff. A couple things that we have like some ideas of some potential future presentations for our meeting, specifically on workday mentorships and gigs and how you balance that with your main role at the university. So that'd be a great thing from an HR perspective to bring in and talk to us about, maybe partnership with the benefits committee on that. One thing that I'm interested in and looking for others on our team to join me as well is when I first started my role in the employee assembly, I was really lost in like, what do I do as a new member? Like, where do I start? Rose, this might resonate with you. So I'd love to see if we could put some sort of like something together, or if there's something that already exists that I just didn't know about. I definitely poked around the box folder looking for things. I'd love to put together like a one pager or something, maybe a PowerPoint, some sort of little guide that sort of says, how do you start communicating with your constituents? What are some of the expectations and ways that we can get involved? So that's just some highlights. We have a few more things on there as well, but that's sort of our top things going on right now. Thanks, everybody.
I was on mute. Thanks, Deb. So moving on to Employee Welfare Committee. Is anyone here that would like to give an update? Because I don't think Christy's here.
I'm just taking a quick look at our calendar notes. Oh, sorry, Jessica, please.
I was just going to mention that Christy had emailed, I think, Yvonne a month or so ago saying that she has a conflict now the first Wednesday of every month. So, she won't be here. I don't know if anyone else, maybe Bethany, has an update on the committee.
I thought we used to be able to keep, she kept very detailed meeting notes in the Zoom invite, but I guess with the Outlook update, it doesn't really let her do that anymore, unfortunately. So I don't have a clear update. Sorry.
No worries. Thank you, Bethany. Moving on to the Benefits and Policy Committee.
Yep. So in our last meeting, we primarily spoke with Ashley Fazio and Jessica, oh Lord, I'm blanking on her last name right now, from HR. We talked about the inclement weather policy and sort of went over again the guidelines of that and how it's being presented. Even though it was rolled out last winter, there wasn't a university closure for a snow day. So it, I think a lot of people haven't yet really experienced navigating those conversations. There was a lot of emphasis on how HR is really trying to encourage supervisors to be flexible within the policy guidelines, and they're offering opportunities for people leaders to join information sessions about that. It's probably going to be kind of a chaotic rollout anyway, just because there's so many nuances. We also talked about the fact that a few of us had received questions from colleagues who are concerned about the daily pay rollout from the emails from payroll that were about, I don't know if any of you have looked into those, this new service that seemed, I actually thought they were spam emails at first, seems sort of nebulous about why is this being offered? Is Cornell making any money on it? How did they vet security concerns? Because Cornell actually shared all of our employee data with this company, whether or not you sign up for an account, it shared like your salary, your social security number, everything that Cornell has access to. So I tried to sort of elevate that to Ashley from an HR perspective. And she said, yes, we're really aware of the concerns. We're trying to work with payroll and IT on messaging. So I'm not quite sure. I haven't heard updates about that, but I think that's the majority of what we covered.
Thanks, Bethany.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes just so we can get through election committee and adjournment?
Motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor of extending the meeting 5 minutes? Just click the, raise hands or click the yes. Help. All right. Awesome. Thank you. All opposed? Click the no if you don't have your video on. Any abstentions? I think the yeses have it. So we'll extend to 1:20. So elections committee, is there any update? Oh, who's our elections committee chair?
Sorry, I'll speak up really quick. Stephanie Rizzou is the elections committee chair. She actually just emailed me and asked, she's going to actually try and set up a meeting for this semester for the elections committee.
Awesome.
And as former elections committee chair, fall semester is actually relatively quiet for elections committee anyway, so she will be in touch with those that are on the election committee, and she's also planning on communicating with the Office of the Assemblies regarding the elections calendar, because they are the rock stars that provide a majority of the logistics and the support for the election.
Thank you so much, Wendy.
You're welcome.
In these 2 minutes that we have, does anybody have anything for open discussion that they want to talk about? No. All right. So with that being said, seeing none, do I have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Is that by unanimous consent? Everybody ready to go? Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, great. It's been properly moved and seconded. We are adjourning our meeting Wednesday, November 6th at 1:18 p.m. Have a good Erica, day, everybody.
Dave had his hand up. I just didn't know if he wanted...